Hello and welcome to The Hearing, our music review show here on the channel. I'm John.
And from Chicago, I'm Scotto.
And here's something that happened over the break.
You got something on you. Did you wash that? Or
my fifth tattoo overall, my first in nearly 20 years. It says, and in the last slate, my scars all bear witness to what I've lived through. A line from the song Vespers by Marianne Call that I really relate to because I have a lot of scars. There's a streamer and occasional YouTuber who goes by the name Mousy. I've mentioned her in the first episode of Free Time. I'm a big fan of hers, and she's been getting a lot of tattoos over the last couple of years. So she inspired me to start getting them again, completely rekindled the addiction. Speaking of that song, particularly in that album, it's on Standing Stones, which we reviewed last year. Mm-hmm. As this episode goes out on Monday, my birthday was 2 weeks ago, and I learned on my birthday, speaking of Standing Stones, that few things are more fun than getting drunk and listening to your favorite album. That was a good time. Before this week's album, on to some news. We've got some bad news and good news. You said go with the bad news first.
Yeah.
Estrons has split up. They're no longer together.
Wow. That did... Less
very sudden long. Announcement. The band lasted 5 years, put out one album, and they split up with a headlining tour booked.
Oh Christ! What the?
Just suddenly over the break, maybe a couple weeks ago, it was announced on social media that they've decided to split up.
They just decided they could not possibly tour with each other.
Well, Tally and Rodri, the vocalist and the guitarist, have a very Davies. Brothers, or what are the two from Oasis, Gallagher brothers kind of relationship. They're not related, but they have that kind of contentious relationship. They work well musically, but don't really get along outside of that. And I don't know details, but I'm just assuming that the two of them just decided they can't work together anymore. Steph, the bassist, is also a producer. That's his main gig. Estrons is kind of a side job. And Adam, the drummer, I'm hoping he'll find a new gig. He's a great drummer. On to the good news. We got two albums coming out in May. One from Yannicka, who we haven't reviewed yet. I'm a big fan. Imagine rock mixed with heavy leanings of pop and hip-hop.
Okay.
Hip-hop is they all have different influences. Hip-hop is the one genre they all like. So it's very interesting music. And one of my absolute favorite bands, who we have yet to review, Bad Religion, is finally releasing their latest album, their new album, in May.
Whoa. I think the first one in what? A couple of years?
They did, can't think of the name of it, the one with True North. It is True North. Okay. So I couldn't remember. That was early 2013.
And there was a Christmas one after that, right?
I think was like a year after that. So it's been a long time.
Yeah, I wouldn't count the Christmas one anyway.
I don't really. I consider True North to be their last album.
Yeah. Right.
That True North was an absolute return to form. They've released a few singles recently that have been carried that through. The first single from the upcoming album, Chaos From Within, classic Bad Religion. It's on Spotify. Also, Yannicka stuff is on Spotify. They've done like 3 or 4 EPs, and only 3 of those songs are going to be on the new album, so definitely check them out. I'm torn on what Bad Religion I want to review, because, I mean, it's so easy to do against the grain, but it's so cliche.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing when you're picking, like, which album. Do you want to do something iconic, or do you want to do something that, like, you know, when I picked an Arcade Fire album, it wasn't like, oh, yeah, we're going to do Funeral, you know, that's the big one.
Yeah.
You know, I felt it made an interesting, more interesting show to do the one that people have rebelled against.
As much as I love Against the Grain, I think it's maybe not, I don't want to go that obvious. I really love Generator. I really love Stranger Than Fiction, even though that was the first on a major label. It's very controversial.
Let's make this fun. How about we do the new one when it comes out?
I swear exactly where I was going to go next is we'll do the next album. And again, True North was so good. I have no faith. I have absolute faith that this will be just as good.
Yeah.
And that their, I'll say pop era is over.
As long as they're not doing Christmas carols, I think it'll be fine.
I was okay with the Christmas album. I'm going back to New America, which was not I mean, it's not, oh, you want to really have fun. And this might be, okay, I'm going to suggest a Bad Religion double feature. I didn't expect to talk about Bad Religion this much this week. I'm going to suggest a double feature. We'll do the new one. And then if we want to get the, if we want the controversial choice, have you ever heard Into the Unknown?
I think I've heard pieces of it, but I don't think I sat through the whole thing.
They basically did a prog album. And even the band doesn't want to admit it exists. So we might have to do that. Anyway, on to this week's album,
yes,
which is, speaking of iconic, from 1980, Scary Monsters and Super Creeps by David Bowie. David Bowie was an English singer, songwriter, and actor, best known for his continual reinvention and his focus on the visual elements of his work.
You know, honestly, I have not gotten over his death still. When you said was, it was kind of like a...
Yeah. Almost two years, probably, because it was January, so it's just over 2 years.
Yeah.
Very beginning of the year.
I think it was January 16, wasn't it?
Okay. I knew it was in January, because it was near the beginning of the year. Okay. Because Bowie and Prince both died in January. And there are a lot of parallels between the two, which we'll argue at a later date. There we go. Bowie's career spanned over 50 years. I had to double check that.
Yes.
15 years. Influencing a wide variety of artists and netting him 10 platinum, 11 gold, and 8 silver album certifications, as well as 11 number one albums in the UK. And in the US, he received 5 platinum and 9 gold certifications and an induction into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in 96. On January 10th, 2016, 2 days after his 69th birthday and the release of his last album, Black Star, Bowie died from liver cancer in his New York City apartment. Scary Monsters and Super Creeps, the full title, which I think that's the last time I'm going to be saying the full title until the end of the show.
Usually it's just Scary Monsters.
Scary Monsters is Bowie's 14th studio album. According to co-producer Toby Visconti, Bowie's method on Scary Monsters was somewhat less experimental and more concerned with achieving a commercially viable sound than had been the case with his recent releases. To that end, the composer spent more time on his own developing lyrics and melodies before recording, rather than improvising music in the studio and making up words at the last minute.
Okay, that being said, the trilogy before this, known as the Berlin Trilogy, there are some great songs on in them, true, but they're very self-indulgent. Uh-huh. Like, you get like a lot of just ambient noise, kind of, you know.
Well, Bowie worked with Eno for a while, so that doesn't.
Well, that, yeah, me. It was a lot of Eno.
The trilogy was with Eno,
right? So okay. there was a lot of that. I mean, so for him to say that it's more commercial than the Berlin Trilogy, that's not really much of a statement.
Okay. Scary Monsters was released on September 12th. 1980, by RCA Records, produced by Bowie and Tony Visconti, and features David Bowie on vocals, keyboard, backing vocals.
A couple guitar session guys. I can't remember their names.
Well, I'll get to that. David Bowie. David Bowie on vocals, keyboards, backing vocals, and saxophone. I always forget he played saxophone in his
own. Yes.
Dennis Davis on percussion, George Murray on bass guitar, Carlos Alomar on guitars, and all due respect to the session players, Carlos Alomar is a hell of a guitar player. One of the best rhythm guitarists out there.
I believe I saw him at the Bowie celebration.
Oh, yeah, because he was with Bowie for several years.
Yeah.
And one of the most respected rhythm guitarists in the world. And additional musicians, Chuck Hammer on guitar synthesizer on Ashes to Ashes and Teenage Wildlife, Robert Fripp guitar on Fashion, It's No Game. You know. It's No Game, Scary Monsters and Super Creeps.
And then he gets some other scrub. I can't remember the guy's name.
Kingdom Come, Up the Hill Backwards, and Teenage Wildlife, like half the album. Roy Batan, I almost said Batty after, because we just reviewed Blade Runner. Piano on Teenage Wildlife, Ashes to Ashes, and Up the Hill Backward. Andy Clark on synthesizer on Fashion, Scream Like a Baby, Ashes to Ashes, and Because You're Young. Pete Townsend on guitar on Because You're Young.
That's the guy's
name. The real legendary guitarist you were thinking about, Tony Visconti, on acoustic guitar on Scary Monsters and Up the Hill Backwards, as well as backing vocals. Lynn Maitland on backing vocals, Chris Porter on backing vocals, and Michi Hirota voice and translation on It's No Game Number One.
Townsend also works with him in the future again on Heathen.
Okay.
So it's one of those, a lot of the post, you know, famous Bowie albums are so underrated. Like people have not checked them out, and maybe it's something we should have done instead of this. I don't know.
You're the one that picked it.
I know, because, and you see why. I was like,
classic.
This one I just went with, like, the oh my god.
This is very Bowie.
Yeah.
Reminder, I don't edit any songs into our episodes, but down in the description, you'll find links to Scary Monsters on Spotify and YouTube. Now on to the tracks. Track number one, It's No Game Number One.
Yeah, it's a very jarring beginning. Well,
it starts with a tape being fast-forwarded.
Yeah.
I think that's what it is.
I think so, too. Or a film being put on the reel.
And spoken lyrics in Japanese with Bowie music on the verses.
Yeah.
It's Michi Hirota. And the riff kind of reminds me of Fashion. Carlos Alomar has a certain groove that he plays on a lot of this album.
Yeah, I mean, it's probably as close to punk as Bowie gets in his career, this song, where he's just belting it out of tune and purposefully.
Yeah, and his vocals just get more insane as the song progresses.
Yeah.
And I love the kind of off-kilter guitar and how aggressive the guitar gets on the second verse in the bridge.
I mean, he'd already sung about fame from the point of view of the famous person, but this is fame and the effects on the rest and why it sucks for the rest of society.
Right. And the guitar solo is amazing. For It's No Game Number One, Bowie challenged Fripp to imagine he was playing a duel with B.B. King, where he had to out B.B., but do it in his own way. So this was Fripp's take on B.B.
Honestly, the guitar playing from beginning to end of this album is just like...
Fripp is a genius. I have that in my notes at some point. And I love the ending, the devolving the guitar and Bowie just yelling, shut up.
Before the Young Ones, by the way, too. Because it sounds exactly like Vivian from the Young Ones.
Yeah. On to track two, Up the Hill Backward. Love the variation on the son clave or the diddly beat at the very beginning.
Right, this is very weird.
This song is a weird Bowie song.
This is so weird because it begins after this like punk song. This you get this intro with this big build up, and you think it's gonna be like a holy shit, this is gonna be a real rock, you know, album, and then the intro stops.
And when I say it's weird, I don't mean weird in the way that all Bowie is weird.
Right.
I mean weird for Bowie. Because it's this group vocal that's very anthemic.
It's very like a 70s style pop song.
Yeah.
It's kind of
folky.
Yes. It's just, I think this entire album is... there's so many themes in it, and one of it is you're laying to rest the 70s and 60s. The game is over, you know. Right. There's nothing to do from here on out, and it's very like a defeated Bowie. It's really what this is.
But that folky poppy thing really makes Fripp stand out because he's still Fripp. And I love the intensity of the guitar solo. He had to be a huge influence on Vernon Reid.
Oh, yeah.
Because this guitar solo really reminds me of Vernon Reid a few years before anybody heard Vernon Reid.
Like, but the phrase using the I'm okay, you're so, such a 70s thing. And it's just so...
Well, I'm okay, you're okay, which was a big book back in the 70s. Big stuff.
Right. Right. Oh, yeah, that is what it was. I was trying to think of where I'd heard it from before. I'm okay. You're so. And it's just, about people just their head being buried up their asses. Like, I think that's kind of the whole album and what he's trying to, like, point at in other songs as to what's going on in the rest of the world.
Exactly, yeah. This is another case where, like, I don't really know the album very well. This is the first time I've heard most of it. So I didn't really get a lot from the lyrics, I have to admit.
Well, right. And yeah, he just does, they get into this like 70s pop thing. And then it just kind of fades off with like a crazy guitar solo, and that's it.
Yeah.
It's probably the weakest song on the album.
And it's one of the weak ones to me. That might pick for weakest, but definitely one of the weakest.
Because it is, I mean, without the guitar playing, there really is nothing to it. Mm-hmm. And I mean, this monstrous intro, and I guess he's fucking with us by just like putting that there, like, oh yeah, we're just going to, you know, hammer things left and right.
Right.
And then just be like, no, we're happy now. Kind of just like,
I said before that there were two songs on the album I'd heard before. This was a third that I'd forgotten about because I'd seen a live version of it. I was looking for like a Carlos Alomar guitar solo because he's mostly the rhythm guitarist.
Yeah.
I found this clip where he plays this guitar solo before Up the Hill Backwards. And I didn't really know Up the Hill Backwards. So I'm like, oh, let me listen to the song. And it comes down, it's these background singers doing this acrobatic thing, singing the song. And I'm like, wait, that can't, that's like a Vegas version of a Bowie song, isn't it? Went and found the original. It sounds just like the original.
Yes. So it's, that's a really weird fucking song.
On to track three, Scary Monsters and Super Creeps. I lied, I said it again. this is very 80s sounding.
God damn, I love this song, though. He's so close to industrial, and it's, I mean, industrial has been kicked around by other people before this, but this could fit on a Ministry album, practically.
It is leading into industrial before really industrial was a thing.
Yeah, it's only 1980.
But it also is kind of new wave.
Oh, yeah.
But then it's also got these acoustic guitars, which are a nice deviation from that new wave thing. And it gets real weird on the chorus with these sound effects that come in that are very unsettling. Yeah. That's more of the I was gonna say industrial influence, but the influence on industrial.
Yeah,
he may have invented industrial with this song.
He kind of flirted with industrial before this on the Berlin Trilogy a little bit, and he worked, of course, with Iggy Pop. So, I mean, they did it before. Mm-hmm. This is like the first time, I think, to just do it in a song that could be released as a single.
Well, yeah, because I was just going to mention I think the real origin of industrial, machine music. That was probably the beginning of industrial, but that was nothing that could be released. Loved the band on Scary Monsters. Loved the drum stabs because it's a solid beat with these occasional hits that really make the drums stand out. And this is where I have the note Fripp is a genius because he is.
Oh yeah, you can't take your ear off the guitar in this. It's just, I mean, the shit he's doing. You're just like, what?
On to track four, Ashes to Ashes. One of the others that I'd heard previously. Probably one of the ones these two are the ones I'm most familiar with because these were the singles, of course.
I think the lyrics of Scary Monsters, though.
Okay.
I think it's drug addiction from the point of view of the drug.
Wow, that's interesting. I'm going to have to go back and look at the lyrics.
Because, I mean, he's singing about this girl that lets him in, you know, I mean, you know, and then, like, she ends up just being stupid on the street. Now she can't socialize. But I love that little girl until the day she dies. So, I mean, some of his lyrics are just like, whoa. Damn. But yeah, this would definitely be one of them. Of course, this next one.
On to track four, Ashes to Ashes. Love the synth guitar at the beginning. I never knew that was a guitar until I read the credits for it. It's just this kind of weird meandering line. Makes sense as a guitar part. Yeah, I played around with it a bit. It's much easier to play on a guitar, or much more logical on a guitar than a synth. And then
I think Mike Garson played it when I saw them. Uh-huh. Yeah, he played it on keyboards.
But it makes more sense, having learned it or messed around with it a bit, it makes a little more sense on a guitar than on a keyboard just because of the way the instrument's laid out. And I just love the kind of loopy sound of it. It's and the slap bass. That's another thing that he kind of played with is marrying rock and funk.
Right, now we're in a funk song. Think of what we've gone through genre-wise, and we're only at the fourth song in this album, you know? We kind of did a punk thing in the first one. We did 70s pop, second one. Industrial on the third. Now we're at funk.
And it's not exactly funk, it's Bowie funk.
Well, right. It's yeah. space funk. That's the thing. Each genre that he's touched hasn't been exactly that genre. Mm-hmm. It's been a Bowie-ized version of that right. genre, too.
Because there's this great mix on the guitars of these this really funky riff from Melamar and this just loud stabs in the chorus.
And I usually hate a sequel song. But this... Are there genius?
Are there many other sequel songs?
I'd say you could, you know what? If you're doing like a John McLaughlin on a scale of 1 to 10, he would do like a scale, be 1 being, I forget what, and then 1 being never and 10 being metaphysical certitude. You could say on a scale of 1 to 10, 1 being Metallica's Unforgiven 2.
Okay.
10 being David Bowie's yeah. Ashes to Ashes.
And it's not really a sequel per se in terms of the story. It just references the song. It references Major Tom.
It's a sequel. It's an outright sequel if you think about
it. Is it a continuation of the Major Tom story, though?
It's...
Outside of the chorus.
It's telling you what really happened to Major Tom. Like, okay. Like, if you think about it, Space Oddity is about... I guess it's, you know, the metaphorical about him going out there and seeing, you know... The what's out there
being seduced by space,
yeah, but he was really just fucking becoming a junkie.
Oh, I never got that.
It was, you know, he shot up with heroin for the first time, and rather than coming back to his old life, that's why when they did that, when someone did that animated Bowie, you know, thing with Space Oddity, I was pissed because they had it where a malfunction happened in the spaceship, and that's what caused.
Well, no, in the song, even if, and I've always taken the song literally, but even if you take it literally, he makes the choice.
Exactly, he knows which way his ship will go. At least he had the decency, unlike the dude from Close Encounters, to think of his wife before taking off.
Right.
But,
I've always thought, and maybe the movie or the book is later, but it was Dave from 2001. Although I think 2001 might be after.
Yeah, it is.
Because maybe that was influenced by Space Oddity. I always took Space Oddity literally. I never thought about the drug angle.
Huh. Well, right. So... Yeah, it was about this whole new world. I mean, that's you could put that to anything. It doesn't even have to be drugs, of course. You can put it just any time, like something, some new aspect of life has been opened up to you, which is why it's so transcendent and used in so many things. Mm-hmm. Because it is anytime something, some completely new aspect of life that you'd never experienced or felt before has suddenly been opened to you, and now you have a chance to go out and explore it and live it.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, it was about drugs.
Oh, knowing Bowie, probably, yeah.
And he had a rough time getting over them throughout the entire 70s. Uh-huh. And yeah, he's trying to kick it, and yeah.
Yeah.
So Ashes to Ashes, it's really about the death of idealism too, you know?
Yeah.
This whole, like when they, the video for this, I don't know if you've ever seen it.
Yes.
There is a funeral procession.
Yes.
And a lot of it's just about, you know, putting.
The procession is pretty much the entire video.
Right. So it's just being beaten down by life, reality, addiction.
And it's as you pointed out, it's the end of the hippie era.
Yeah.
Because that lasted into the 70s.
Right.
And he's kind of putting that all to bed in the 80s.
And he's literally putting like experimental music behind him on this album too, because after this, it's the big record deal and you know. Uh-huh. And very commercial music after this.
Yeah. Well, yeah, this was right before the bad times.
Yeah.
But you were talking about the drug issues. We were chatting about Bowie on Facebook Messenger a few days ago, and we were talking about some of his odder choices. And I said something along the lines of, "Yeah, the milk really got to him," and I'm sure the cocaine didn't help.
Right.
Because there's this legendary story about how during his most drug-addled period, he lived on cocaine and milk.
Oh yeah.
onto track five, Fashion, the other song I knew going in. Loved the great big scary guitar part in the beginning. Fripp is just terrifying on this song particularly.
Yeah, there's a lot you could get from this one too. I mean, it's straight up new wave.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Duran Duran should have sent him royalty checks for everything they fucking recorded, because it sounds like it came from this.
Yeah, yeah. And that big scary guitar is a great contrast to this funky rhythm guitar and bass.
Yeah. But I mean, comparing, you could say it's a comparison. Some people say just take it at face value and it's, you know, ridiculing Fashion and, mm-hmm. and what's going on.
Well, it's also talking about politics and kind of
exactly merging them. It is kind of, you know, blurring Fashion and politics and how it's just this nonsense that's just mm-hmm. nobody fucking knows.
And someone else who should have been sending him royalty checks is RuPaul. Because RuPaul took that song, their favorite song, famous song CoverGirl, half from this.
But of course,
that gave him a career.
It's a line that's just so goofy, but if you think about it, it's menacing as hell.
Oh, yeah.
We're the goon squad and we're coming to town.
Uh-huh. Turn to the left, turn to the right. Bowie talked a lot about fascism. And
yeah,
clearly on this, if you really pay attention.
Yeah. So, yeah, he ain't just talking about clothes people are wearing.
On to track six, Teenage Wildlife. This is the most conventional rock song on the album so far.
Yes, straight up 80s pop here.
And he ripped himself off. Occasionally an artist will do that, and it always cracks me up.
Sometimes they just take an old idea.
This is basically Heroes, musically. It's Heroes.
Oh, yeah, I could see that, definitely. I mean, it may be a little ahead of its time, though, considering it's only 1980 for something being straight up 80s pop.
But it's he borrowed the progression from Heroes completely. Yeah,
you're right.
And Heroes is probably my favorite. But I have to admit, I'm not a huge Bowie fan, but Heroes is probably my favorite song of his. So this is one of my favorites on the album. And his, I like how his vocals are slower than the rhythm of the song. He did that a lot, and it always amused me.
Yeah.
He sang slower than the rhythm of the song and made it work somehow. And I'm sure this influence is backwards, but something about his vocals reminds me of Dr. Frankenfutter, Tim Curry. I'm sure Tim Curry was taking from Bowie, but
I'm trying to think. 73. He did Aladdin Sane. So I think he was big enough that probably influenced Curry.
Yeah. I'm sure Curry was taking from Bowie and, in this case, I think Bowie was kind of taking it back because he does sound very Frankenfutter on this vocal. And then again, another great frenetic solo at the end. Rip. On to track seven, Scream Like a Baby.
I don't know how you'd classify this one.
This is my favorite because I love the sort of epic arena rock opening.
Yeah. That just
turns weird.
Yeah, it gets very... Yeah, I guess, yeah, you could say it is almost like a bizarro arena rock.
Yeah.
Deconstructed arena rock, you could almost call it.
There's these weird timing changes on the pre-chorus and the bridge. We get to the bridge and the vocal is sped up. I mean, electronically sped up and then slowed down.
Yeah.
It's just, it is bizarro arena rock. That's perfect.
It's disturbing as hell. It's a hellscape.
And this isn't the one that really disturbed me. That's interesting that you would say that.
Well, I mean, just
lyric-wise,
because I mean, the music fits with it because, I mean, it is just about the experience of being a political prisoner.
Okay, yeah.
Or you know, persecuted for your sexuality, right. Which, I mean, singing about that in 1980, it's just like...
mm-hmm. And Bowie was right on the forefront of all that.
Yeah.
On to track eight, Kingdom Come. This was originally written and recorded by Tom Verlaine from Television.
I had no idea this was a cover until we did this.
Mm-hmm. I found out when I was reading the tracks.
Amazing.
I went and listened to the original.
Yeah.
Both are fairly conventional rock songs.
Yeah.
It's, I think, a bit too straightforward musically for me, for Bowie.
It's a perfect companion piece to Scream Like a Baby, though. I mean, it's about somebody being in prison, and of course, it gives it a whole different context about somebody being locked up. And I think I think he kills himself in the end.
Okay. This again, the first time I heard it. So a lot of times when I hear something for the first time, the lyrics don't really latch on to me.
I mean, well, you know, that whole thing, I won't be breaking no rocks, you know, is when he just, he finds a blade of some sort, and he, like, you know, just does it. The guards just watch him die.
This one is my weakest. For some reason, it just irritated me. I'm not sure why. I think it's just Bowie doing conventional rock.
It is tough to get your head around this one. Yeah. Yeah, I could see why it would be.
On to track 9, Because You're Young. The opening is so obviously Pete Townsend. He does nothing to disguise himself.
Right.
And I just love the groove. It's another conventional rock song, but a really great groove. Love the prominent drums and bass. Bowie's music, the reason I say I'm not a big Bowie fan, I absolutely respect him. He was a brilliant songwriter and a great singer. But his music, for some reason, has always creeped me out. It's like Beyond the Black Rainbow, a movie we reviewed back in 2012. And when I said about that movie, I respect the hell out of it, but I don't like it because it is the creepiest thing I've ever seen.
Yeah.
I respect the hell out of Bowie. He was incredibly talented. But his music has always creeped me out for some reason. And the ending of this song thoroughly disturbed me. I don't know why exactly, but it's just something that just... of his music does that to me.
I'm trying to remember how it ends exactly.
I don't have it in my notes, and I didn't have time to go back and re-listen. But
like, I just remember it ending with like a Pete Townsend guitar solo, kind of, and a fading out.
Probably not the very ending. Probably something before that. The last chorus is what it does. Yeah. It has it to me. I don't know, something just disturbed me. And again, Bowie's music always just disturbs me. and I think that's probably the thing that disturbs me is probably the thing that real Bowie fans love about his work.
Yeah.
You know, I'm a big Rush fan, and, you know, people, notoriously hate on Geddy's voice. So
I think what people like about him is that he's pretty transparent. He just did whatever he liked.
Right.
Unfortunately, after this one, he liked making money.
Yeah. Was Let's Dance right after this?
Yeah.
Okay.
It was right after this. He goes from Scream Like a Baby
to Serious Moonlight.
Yeah, Serious Moonlight, China Girl, Let's Dance, Modern Love.
Right. And the thing a lot of people said when he died was that he gave them permission to be different.
Oh, yeah.
And the reason I draw parallels to Prince is because it's the same thing with Prince for a lot of people. He gave them permission to be different. And also because they experimented with a lot of different genres and had a very wide influence. They're very similar artists in a lot of ways.
Oh, definitely. You can easily see Prince was kind of a disciple.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Prince was definitely influenced by Bowie, certainly.
Yeah.
And Prince was the Black Bowie, effectively.
Yeah.
In that genre. For whatever reason, and I like Prince, again, Prince, I like a few songs, but I'm not an overall fan. It's kind of odd in that sense. On to track 10, the final track, It's No Game, number 2. Also very reminiscent of Heroes.
Yeah, how many times I had to listen to this before I realized it was the same fucking lyrics as the first.
Is it? Okay. I thought so. I wasn't sure.
Yes, the same exact lyrics. There's two lines added at the very end. Just the difference now. It's the contrast. The beginning, he was brash. Mm-hmm. He was aggressive. And in this version... In this version, he is just done.
Resigned.
He's resigned. The way he, you know, that line to be insulted by these fascists is so degrading. Like in the first one, there's so much anger, you know, it's so degrading.
In the beginning, he is protesting the end of that era.
Right.
Here he is accepting it.
And then, yeah, in part two, it's like to be insulted by these fascists is so degrading.
He's accepted it by the end of the album.
He adds these two lines at the end of it, though. People around the world smear camel shit on the walls. And then talks about children sorting through garbage.
And as I'm looking through the song titles, as we're talking about this, the whole album is this.
Yeah.
Is that end of the era.
It is. It
up
is.
Up the hill backwards.
This is pretty much a concept album without...
Scary Monsters, Ashes to Ashes, the death of... Not the death of, because he killed Major Tom later in his most disturbing work, Black Star. But still, it's you know, Major Tom is a junkie. Fashion, politics and fashion, that's when that really became a thing.
Right. Fashion, Teenage Wildlife, and Scream Like a Baby and Kingdom Come you're are young. All just... And yeah, Teenage Wildlife and Because You're Young are both about people just not getting what's going on in the world. I mean, the whole thing where he's saying, you know, there's documentaries on refugees, there's all this shit that you could see that's going on in the world, and who else was thinking about kids sorting garbage for, you know, their work in the third world back in 1980? You know, it didn't seem like something you could find readily in pop culture back then.
And if you think about it, the hippie era, that whole thing kind of came to an end in the mid-70s.
And then he's disco. Saying, though, if you put a bullet in my brain, it makes all the papers.
Mm-hmm. But so he's had 5 years or so to deal with that end.
Yeah. Well, he took off for most of that era. He was in Germany from, like, I think 77 till now.
Oh, okay. So now he's coming back.
He's back in New York.
And he's seeing what everything has turned into, and wrote an album complaining about it.
He worked with John Lennon too a lot. Okay. He spent a lot of time with Lennon in New York.
So put a bullet in my brain, it makes all the papers.
Little did he know.
Well, this was before Lennon was killed. Okay.
Yeah.
Oh shit.
Yeah. And somebody pointed out, I just saw that it wasn't a coincidence that the first track is an Englishman singing and a Japanese woman. Mm-hmm. You know, it's, you know, a John and Yoko nod.
Okay.
But yeah, this came out like a month before Lennon died, I think.
Oh, shit.
But yeah, he spent a lot of time with Lennon before this. And you know, they were even saying about how, like, It's No Game was kind of like Revolution by the Beatles.
And Lennon's later stuff, particularly right toward the end, he was in the same wavelength. Not musically, but he was complaining about the change of the times, too.
True. I think a lot of the 70s Lennon was, but I remember it was unfortunate he went in his rockabilly.
Yeah, sure.
It would have been like if Bowie had died during Young Americans or something, you know? It was kind of like, really? The nostalgia trip?
Yeah. You know, I would love it if Lennon were still alive, because I'd love to hear what was on his mind these days, but he'd probably just be an angry curmudgeon like Waters. Because there's a lot of parallels between them, you know, Waters and Lennon were kind of the same guy.
Oh yeah, definitely. I mean, I think Waters wishes he was more like that. Well, yeah. But you know, Waters, you know, there was a great story about Waters freeing like a political refugee, reuniting like a mother and her child. And it was like they somehow found out that the guy in charge was a Floyd fan or something. So they pretty much released the pitbull, aka, you know, Roger Waters, do your thing and be a dick to this guy until he, you know, and got the job done.
Oh god. All right, so obvious answer, I should say, to this question. Would you recommend it?
Definitely, and I recommend seeing the Bowie celebration that it was in Chicago a couple weeks ago. Earl Slick plays all the guitar parts. Mike Garson, who is a terrible front man, but was Bowie's, you know, keyboardist for like everything. of course, we mentioned Al Marr. The main singer was someone I'd never heard of, Bernard Fowler.
Okay, yeah, he worked with,
a lot of work Chic. With the Stones.
I think he was in, Bernard, wasn't he in Chic, I thought.
Maybe.
Or no, I'm thinking of another Bernard.
But he,
now it's my turn to Google.
Yeah, he was mostly a background singer for the Stones, I thought. And the special guests were...
No, I'm thinking of somebody else. The bass player from Chic was Bernard Edwards. That's what I'm thinking of. Oh, yeah, he was a background singer for the Stones.
I got to see Corey Glover, though, from In Living Color. And I understand New York not only had Corey Glover, but Vern Reed also joined them.
Nice. I watched that. Which song did you recommend?
Young American. Not exactly one of my favorite Bowies.
Same here. But Corey Glover transformed it.
Just fucking blew the whole theater away.
Corey Glover is one of my favorite singers of all time, and he just transformed that song.
He also did Ashes to Ashes.
Man.
Yeah, I know. He did Mercury's part in Under Pressure. I'm trying to think of what else he did. Bernard Fowler did Bowie's part.
Nice.
Glover did Mercury. Mm-hmm. So the two of them, amazing.
We were talking about the future, what we were going to be reviewing in the next few weeks. Next week is Zappa, because who can stand up to Bowie but Zappa? After that, we're going to Mars Volta, which I think is a nice carryover from Zappa.
Yeah.
I'm thinking, because I said we got to get this in Living Color. Stain is a very, very experimental album.
Cool.
I think that will go nicely after Mars Volta. We got to get to some Living Color because they are amazing. They're still together. They split up for many years, got back together. Anyway, you would definitely recommend it.
Yes.
Obviously, you put it on the list. I have never gone for a palate cleanser so quickly after reviewing an album as I did this week. I just needed comfort food after this. I listened to a few bandmade songs because this is just freaked me out. Having said that, I definitely recommend it, but mostly for Robert Fripp, because the man is a genius.
I mean, I don't even know if I'd put this as Bowie's best work either. I mean, but it's definitely just like a, oh my God. I mean, you know, Ziggy, I would say Diamond Dogs. Even stuff like Hunky Dory, earlier stuff where he's still like doing a little folk in there, you know. It was just, this is one of his most eclectic, though, I think.
Diamond Dogs is one I need to check out because aside from one song, Bowie played all the guitar on it.
Yeah.
And he was a surprisingly good guitar player. All right, that's it for Scary Monsters and Super Creeps. Until next time, and we'll be reviewing Zootalores by Frank Zappa. That'll be fun. Always remember, never forget, wherever you go in life, there you are.
There you are.